Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and I'm speaking today with Joseph Shatner, editor and publisher of the Shatner Energy Report. You can find his Eye on Energy, a free service to investors, at shatnerenergyreport.ca. And Joseph also advises some high net worth and institutional investors on some of his larger services. But we're always glad to have Joseph here with us to talk about the fundamentals of the energy market, in specific the oil and the nat gas sector. Joseph, when you look at the big picture, the energy sector has really diverged from the rest of the general markets. Everything seems to be under pressure almost all year long, really starting the end of last year. We've seen the U.S. equity markets roll over. We've seen the cryptos roll over. We've seen a lot of even the precious metals under pressure. But oil and gas have really diverged and stayed strong. What do you think's behind the continued strength beyond just the war in Ukraine and beyond some of the news blips we've heard? What's continuing to keep oil above $100 a barrel?
The bulls are looking at supply, and they're looking at the issue where OPEC, you know, put out their report just recently of the data for the month of May, and they only increased production by 153,000 BOEs a day to 28.6 million, and the market was looking for a 400,000 barrel a day increase, and the prior month, I think they only increased by 57. So OPEC's capacity to bring on production is not there. Saudi Arabia raised production, Iraq raised production, but Libya's fell a significant over 100,000 barrel a day month. The other one is, of course, you know, the United States and EU working to turn off the taps of oil from Russia to Europe and trying to get, you know, European storage up so that they have that ability. Hungary is against it because Hungary's refineries use Russian crude and to convert them and take other oil takes a long time. So they're not in favor of it. So they're not keen on them. And they're going to get exemptions to 24, 25 because they want unanimous decisions. So they're going to probably throw some money at Hungary to help them convert. And they're going to say you're exempt till 24, 25. Italy and Slovakia and a few others may also want exemptions. So the way they get around and getting unanimous decision is by allowing exemptions, which is cute. The other one is Biden is now talking to Venezuela and saying, you know, that we're going to take 12 of your people that we put on our sanction list. That just came out this morning, and I wrote it up in our Eye on Energy today. And they also said that two energy companies that have operations in Venezuela, Eni, which is Italian, and Repsol, which is Spanish, are now able to buy and sell and produce oil from Venezuela and ship it to Europe. So again, another way to break the logjam over Russian crude. And Chevron was given an exemption not to drill and produce out of any more wells, but Chevron, which is a very big producer, one of the biggest producers in Venezuela, has been given approval to do field work and you know, get things working. And so this is an olive branch from Biden to Maduro, and you know, the opposition is in favor of it because they, of course, want to see the economy recover. And this pressure that Biden is putting on Maduro is maybe you've got to open up your country to a broader coalition. You've got to bring the opposition in, and we've just given you an olive branch. If you want more olives, then you know, yours is the next move. We've made a big move here, allowing you to sell more oil and take people off the sanctions list. It's your move from here. So the market's looking at that. I'm on the other side. I'm looking at demand. U.S. demand is already down from 21.4 at the peak of January to the data that came out today was 19.7 million, so down 1.7 million barrels. And China, which was consuming 14.5 million, is now under 12.5 million because of the lockdowns of the east coast of China. So you've got, 2 million there plus 1.7 million from the States. That's 3.7 million. Plus you have the 1.5 million more barrels coming on from the SPR. So my view is that the supply and demand are in balance and heading to surpluses because of the fact of what's going on in China and the U.S., a weaker demand. And that is not in the market right now. The bulls are looking at one side, and there's not many bears of us who are looking at the other side, being demand.
Yeah, it's always interesting, Joseph, when everybody's on one side of the equation and they're all convinced that oil, I see articles showing that oil could go to $200, $300. You know, we're hearing a lot of pie in the sky numbers, and a lot of that is based on some doom and gloom. And it's also interesting that we're back to talking about Venezuela and looking for oil there. But there is that other aspect on tariffs from the EU and Russia. I'd love to get your take on this, that they're saying that buyers are going to have to pay more if the EU tariffs are imposed. And they're saying that U.S. is open to tariffs on Russian oil that would allow them to still move their oil around, but maybe limit their revenues for Putin. What's your take on some of these tariffs that we're seeing from Europe and Russia?
I think it's because Europe is backlashing, so the Americans are looking for another way around it. That looks like they're making a tougher move on Russia. Russia sells maybe 2.5-3 million barrels to Europe. So if the Americans put in a $30, $40, $50 tariff on it so that they can say, okay, if you sell oil to us, to Europe, which means Hungary and Italy and other countries, and they put that tariff on and they do not give exemptions to those countries, then Putin can say, shove it. We're going to sell to India and China and the rest of the world, and you're not getting our oil. And all of your refineries are used to cutting creating product from our oil. There's not, you're going to have to find oil of a similar nature. And wherever you buy that from, the buyers who were buying it before are now going to buy my crude at full price. So to me, this is Biden and the U.S. administration grasping at straws. I don't think it's going to work. You know, Biden is a very difficult situation. He's got a rising inflation that's not going down. Food inflation is getting worse, not better. You've got dry weather conditions in India. India's frozen selling its wheat to export markets. So that means, there's less food around the world. Ukraine and Russia aren't selling much around the world either because of the war effort, the war issues that are going on. So we're going to have a food shortage, and all of that has not really gone into the CRB and into the food inflation at the store. You know, we all know our food prices are up when we do go to the store, but we really haven't had the food inflation yet. And we write about that in our report that will be coming out next Friday about how bad that can be and how serious the numbers are going to be in terms of people with insufficient food availability. And Biden's going to have a difficult time in the November elections. So he's battling the war drums, and anything he can do, which says big bad Russia, big bad Russia, that's his only gig in town now. He's a failed president, a failed presidency. He can't get anything more passed through Congress. Congress sees that they have a good shot at winning both the House and the Senate, the Republicans do. And Biden's presidency is effectively over if there's a majority in the Republicans for both the House and the Senate. And that, to me, is the issue why Ukraine and big bad Russia gets the attention it does.
Yeah, and it's interesting to note that the Biden administration has given lip service to how they've tried to pave the way for better oil prices, but it's just those darn producers have not taken them up on a lot of their leases. But a lot of people remember the canceling of the Keystone Pipeline right out of the gate in the Biden administration and the canceling of leases on federal lands. But if we just peel it back even from the current administration and look at the longer-term picture, ESG is on everybody's mind. And when you think about how that has affected the investment from financial institutions into the oil and gas sector, a lot of people would argue there's been underinvestment for over a decade, and that a lot of these funds have avoided oil and gas, and that their weighting inside of some of the indexes has shrunk. So how much of this is some of these temporary geopolitical fireworks, and how much of this supply issue could be longer-term structural issues, at least in the United States?
Well, I agree that there's underinvestment by the public companies because the shareholders have said you haven't made adequate returns, you've got great cash flows, pay down debt first, and then give it to us. So give it to us in dividends, give it to us in special dividends, give it to us in buybacks, and don't reinvest. And I think that was the rhetoric going up to a few months ago. And now you even got Biden saying that security of supply and waving the flag with the oil company saying, please increase your spending. We need to make sure we have enough for ourselves. We need to make sure we can supply Europe and cut off big bad Russia. And so that is really the change that's come. And if you look at individual companies that have been reporting, not their Q4 results when they were waving that shareholder focus, now they're talking about growing production, costs increasing, but they're going to increase their CapEx budgets, growing 5 to 10%, looking at new plays, wells that, you know, that would have been tier two and tier three, where there might have been a 2-year or 3-year payout, are now under a 1-year payout. So the economics are very, very favorable. We saw U.S. production go up 100,000 on the week from 11.8 to 11.9. And the drill rig count is going up again in the States, and also after its breakup, it's going to go up very quickly in Canada from what the Canadian companies are saying. So I think we're going to see a turn on of the engine of bringing on more production, and it'll be because of the security of supply and waving the flag both in Canada and the States. And I think that the issue of paying extraordinary dividends or paying a more aggressive normal course issuer bids will be less part of the rhetoric going forward.
Well, when we look at the oil and the nat gas companies, I know you favor the natural gas companies over the oil companies for fundamental reasons, but if we just look at the whole sector, do you think it's a situation where if we saw a slowdown in growth in GDP like we did in the first quarter, and we continue to see that pressure, many people are saying that the whole commodity complex is going to get hit further in that kind of a slowing growth environment? But so far, again, oil and gas have diverged from most of the other commodities and held on to their gains where the others have pulled back. Do you think it'll eventually hit the companies? Do you think it'll eventually hit their bottom line? Or can the companies diverge even if oil and gas prices pull back some?
Well, we've seen grain prices stay high and go higher. So, so you've seen maybe some of the metals back off. Gold, of course, backed off. Energy has stayed up. And that was the same case in Q2 of 08 when we were 147 for the price of oil. And then when the financial crisis hit and we went into the slowdown and recession, the price of everything got clipped and energy got really shafted from 147, I think, down to $38 in a matter of less than 9 months. So I'm in the camp that, we are going to go into recession. The data is very clear. The Fed has said they will tighten. And they're raising the price of money, and we know that from the Federal Reserve announcements of, the 50 basis point rise. The second is they're going from quantitative easing to quantitative tightening, and you and I have talked about this before. And, they were buying $120 billion a month, and now they're going to start in June to sell off or let run down the portfolio by $47.5 billion. And then that's going to go to $95 billion starting September. So that swing from 120 to minus 95 is $2.3 trillion a year. So that's over 10% of U.S. GDP. That's a very, very tough tightening of the U.S. economy. And I'm in the camp that we're going to see recession by Q3, Q4, and that energy at some point is going to feel the pain. Germany's in, you look at where the economic juggernauts are. We know the U.S. is slowing down from all the data. You look at the consumer stuff from just Walmart and Target in the last 48 hours about all the problems for consumers. And the U.S. consumer, 70% of the U.S. GDP. And then you go into what's going on in China with 20% of the GDP shut down, and manufacturing plants are down. Apple is now admitting that they're not going to be able to make and sell as many iPhones. And then you have Germany with all the problems with semiconductor chips and all the problems that they have from getting inputs that they need from Ukraine, which like everything from cabling for wires to make the cars to semiconductors that come in from the United States and China and Taiwan and Korea and Japan, they can't get them. And so I think we're looking at, if the three biggest economies in the world are rolling over and weakening, then at some point oil can't fight that. And we're going to see a reversal of the euphoria in energy. And when they go from loving to hating, I think you all know, you mentioned MEMS and FANGs and how quickly the stocks can be murdered. And look at Target today, went down 30% in one day. That's nasty. And I think that the oil stocks probably have a 2-for-1 sale in front of them between now and the end of Q3.
Yeah, as the old saying goes, Joseph, the markets take the stairs up and then the elevator down. So when these things sell off, they sell off hard and they catch a lot of people on the wrong side of the boat. But just looking a little more forward, even into Fed policy and some of these growth estimates, if there is that point where it's almost a checkmate moment where the Fed tries to dry up the liquidity and they try to reduce their balance sheet and they put in a couple more 50 basis point hikes, if the market throws a tantrum, not really a taper tantrum because they've already tapered, but I guess a rate hike tantrum, and gets to the point where there is more extreme volatility and a lot of sectors, maybe including energy, get hit pretty hard. Do you think there's a point where they have to step in, reverse course, start cutting again, and try to reliquify the markets? And at this point, with this kind of a macro backdrop where recession's on the doorstep, if they did do that, can they reliquify these markets like they have the last few times, or have they passed the point of no return?
Well, the problem is, what do you do about inflation? You know, if they reliquify, they just reignite inflation, and that gets even worse. And, you know, when you have very low unemployment, when you have wage rates going up pretty sharply right now, if you go and reliquify, then, you know, wage rates are going to go even higher, and you're going to see asset prices go up, which would be help the wealth effect. But it'll make the job even tougher for the Fed to get inflation under control later, which means even higher prices. Do you want the Volcker years when we went to 20% short rates and 15% long rates? If they want to, you know, maybe they push rates to 4 or 5% here to cool the economy down, and they accept a moderate recession to get things back in equilibrium. Look, I'm bullish long term on energy because I agree with the fact that we're going to need a transition, and natural gas is the winner, but we need to have fossil fuels to bring on more nickel, more copper, more lithium, so that we can make that transition in the next 5-10 years more towards renewables. But you need to bring on more fossil fuels to do that in the countries, for the countries that are going to bring on the metals that are needed for that transition to renewables. So I'm a bull longer term. I just think the rally we had from March of 2020 to recent months is excessive. And we're already starting to see chips in the market. We had a 1,060-point down day 2 weeks ago. We're now 1,080 points as you and I are talking. And I think the Dow probably has a 24, 25,000 written all over it. And, that's a serious decline from where we are. I think maybe we get a bounce then into maybe July or August, and then another major decline wave. And that next decline wave, when the market goes down severely, both the Dow, the S&P, the composite, the TSX, that's when I think energy gets the 2x4. So we're prepared now. Markets, energy stocks are down today. But I think the worst part of the decline is going to be in that August, September, October period. And so we've been telling our subscribers to lighten up, take profits. There were fabulous profits made, and we recommended a lot of fabulous ideas that were up 10 baggers, some 15 baggers, from March of 2020 to the highs in 2021, and some got higher even this year. But I think the vulnerability of the sector is enormous. And so what we're doing is we're going through quarterly reports with our clients in our subscriber service, telling them how they did and what we think would be a great price to buy it when it became a bargain again. Not that it'll be as cheap as March of 2020, but it'll be cheaper than it is today. So if you're overinvested, take profits and build up some cash reserves, which is what we've been saying for many, many months on our radio interview with you guys. And that's the stance we still have today.
Okay, Joseph, so it sounds like as far as people that may be sitting on some nice profits, probably best to harvest some of those gains, take some chips off the table, at least some of the chips off the table, and you're going to be waiting for that corrective move in the sector where a lot of these go on sale. You even mentioned maybe a 2-for-1 sale. I'm sure some people may not like to hear that are heavily invested, but there's also a lot of people that have been watching this move in energy from the sidelines that feel like they missed it. So would your advice for them be just to hold tight, wait for that corrective move, and then position once you see, is there a certain level of a pullback you'll be looking for? And is there any area of the oil and gas sector that you're more bullish on after that corrective move plays through?
Well, longer term, I think, and when we get this correction and we're down in October at much lower levels, I think our top commodity we like is natural gas. We think the service sector will do very, very well because the activity level will pick up and utilization will go up and prices will go up. And my and then oil, light oil, would be my third. And I'm not as big a fan of heavy oil because if Venezuela does come back on the market, they're a lot closer to the U.S. Gulf Coast than we are. So I think that at some point we will lose market share in the States on heavy oil. And since we don't have any pipelines going east and we only have TMX sometime next year to go west, We're really, unless, we've heard Premier Kenney talk about wanting to build a new pipeline, but with the XL pipeline dead, and Biden still in power for another few years, even if he loses control of the Congress, getting new pipelines built is a problem for heavy oil. So it's my least favorite commodity of all of them. So I would, if people think it's a shock that when I say prices of oil are going to go down two for one sale stocks, pull out the MEM stocks, pull out the FANG stocks, pull out almost, what would look at the market at all, Shopify, look at the correction in the bank stocks so far. The market is not immune to recession tightening by central banks. And this is still just, let's say, if I would use a golf analogy, we're on the third hole. There's a lot more downside as this bear market unfolds. And we are down 30% in the composite, so that is clearly a bear market. We're down 20% plus on the S&P, clearly a bear market. And the Dow is down more than 20% from the highs, clearly a bear market. So, people can say, oh, the market's in good shape and da-da-da-da, and a little correction, buy the dip. I think if they do that and they're on margin, they're going to get shafted badly.
Well, that's some cogent thoughts for investors to consider, Joseph. And I know that when we see this kind of carnage across the board, there probably is going to be a point where it hits the energy sector. It's been spared so far, but it may be the last sector standing, but it's probably going to pull almost everything down on this next move we're going to see across the board. But you keep a pretty close tab on the companies, on the sector, on the fundamentals, and follow along with it. But you also have a conference coming up where you're going to be showcasing some of the companies you think are doing some of the best work and have solid fundamentals. Would you like to tell our listeners a little bit more about this conference you have coming up later in the year?
Yeah, so as I've said now that I think I'm cautious and bearish on the market, I think we're going to see significant downside for the sector. I'm bullish for the next 5 to 7, 8 years because of this renewable game plan, and that we are going to need to bring on lithium and nickel and copper and all the other inputs for renewables, which means fossil fuels are going to be needed in South America and Africa and Asia, et cetera. So we're going to need, there's going to be a significant pickup in the price of oil after this recession. And I think we'll see all-time highs, 150 or more. So what we're doing at this conference, which is Saturday, October 22nd, and we'll have more 4K report and for your listeners in terms of access to tickets, et cetera, later on as we get the website all set up, the event website for registration for tickets in August, September. But we're inviting 30 energy service, pipeline and infrastructure companies, ones that are on our coverage list, ones that we like. And the TMX is going to run a special section, 5 companies on innovative technology, so everything to do with renewables, and they're going to have, in total we'll have 35 companies here in Calgary. It'll be at Mount Royal University on Saturday, October 22nd, and we'll talk more about it with you and your listeners, and so people in Western Canada who can come into the conference, we have space for 600 plus attendees, up from 400 from our last conference 2 years ago before the hiatus for the pandemic. So we'll have lots of space for people to come in and spend the day with a lot of great companies. And if they own them, they can go into the presentations. If not, there'll be booths so they can spend time with them at the booths. And the presentations are different. A lot of times companies at conferences get 10 minutes and that's it. And it's very hard to get access to the senior management. Our format is different. We do 45-minute sessions, 30-minute presentations by the companies, 15-minute moderated Q&A, and then, of course, lots of time for people to visit with them at the booth. So it's something to keep in mind. And again, I'm a long-term bull. I just think that nothing goes up in a straight line. And as we know, the price of crude went, from negative. Remember, we were $6.50, but it was really negative in April of 2020, all the way up to, $130.50. A backing and filling is normal. And we saw that in the 1999 to 2008 cycle. There were two severe corrections along the way. This is our correction within this new bull market. So if you say, Joseph, are you a long-term bull? Yes. Are you a short-term bear? Yes.
Makes sense, and I appreciate you sharing your short-term and longer-term outlook with us, Joseph, and also some details on that upcoming conference. I'm sure we'll get more information from you on that as we get closer to the event. And if people want to follow Joseph's work, please click on the link below this interview. We'll have a link to the Schachter Energy Report there for everybody to check out what Joseph does. And always appreciate you sharing some of your time and wisdom with us here at the KE Report.
My pleasure, Chad. You take care, and we'll talk to you guys in June.